White Network presents the International Jew Study Hour. Reading and commentary on Henry Ford's great classic about Jewish power in America.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and students of the International Jew Study Hour on this December 27th, winter evening. I am Carolyn Yeager, and I am here with
Hadding. Yes, Hadding Scott here.
Very good. I thought I should let you say your own name instead of saying it for you every week.
Yeah.
Hadding, we're only a few days from the end of 2012. We're coming to the close of the year. What do you think of that?
Oh, I don't know. Things look pretty gloomy for the USA, I think. You know?
Yeah.
Where I am in Florida, I see businesses closing. Utility costs are going up. I was in some online discussions where people were talking about how the federal government is never going to, the debt is going to become unmanageable very soon, which is very clear.
Yeah, well, I've been seeing that too, and I don't know. You know, it's just kind of amazing that they can be people. So many people can be saying that, and yet nothing is really done about it.
Yeah.
And they talk about we're going over the cliff, all this kind of terminology, and yet nobody in government acts like they're excited or nervous about it or thinks they must take charge and do something. Obviously, we have found ourselves in a Jewish tyranny in a way that it comes about maybe a little bit differently than you might think it will, but not really, because, you know, all these signs have been there and all these things are going on. And what I noticed this year is that the Jews have been more out in the open and more outspoken, and particularly in their attacks on anti-Semitism.
Mm. Yeah, I think tyranny is the wrong word. If we had a tyranny where somebody were actually responsible for the direction of the country, some of these problems might be fixed.
Well, I agree. I agree with you. I didn't like that word tyranny either, but it's just the only one that came to mind. What would be a better thing to call it? What kind of situation? What kind of political situation
liberalism.
Are we in here?
It's liberalism. I mean, you know, we're involved in some things that we shouldn't be involved in that are very expensive. These foreign wars, because of Jewish influence, but they're able to do that because of liberalism. Really, liberalism in the 19th century sense, the kind that the libertarians think is cool.
Liberalism in the 19th century.
Yeah. In other words, because of this democratic republic, the Jews are able to influence policy. We're so open to this kind of influence, we don't have controls to prevent that.
What form of government would you prefer?
That's a difficult question. You know, in certain situations, you need a dictator. A republic is okay if you have I think the Swiss probably have a pretty good system. As I understand, they elect representatives who elect representatives. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, let's see. Maybe we'll get some ideas on that from our chapter tonight. We're going on to chapter 22, which is episode 27 for us. Jewish testimony on Are Jews a Nation? Well, just to remind the listeners, last week we were talking about what was that last week? Now I don't even have it here in front of me. What non-Jews say
how
about
how they disguise their power, wasn't it?
Yeah, how they disguise their how they conceal. That's right, how they concealed what they're up to, or their numbers and so on too. Their infiltration of the nation. But now, and they're by saying, yeah, because it was by saying that Jewishness is a religion. it's not a race. And that was what it was all about. Jewish is a religion, so they don't have to announce themselves. They don't have to be counted in the censuses as Jews. So they conceal themselves in that way. But now they're contrasting here that the Jews, and of course I'm very familiar with this, I'm sure many people are, that the Jews are, amongst themselves, they make it very clear that they think they're a nation. And I've gone into this in so many ways, but it's interesting how they put it out in this chapter. So, we will continue with it and,
all right.
See how it goes.
So it starts
with a couple of quotes, right?
Yes, chapter 22, Jewish testimony on Are Jews a Nation? I will give you my definition of a nation, and you can add to the adjective, Jewish. A nation is, in my mind, an historical group of men of a recognizable cohesion held together by a common enemy. Then, if you add to that the word Jewish, you have what I understand to be the Jewish nation. That's Theodor Herzl. Let us all recognize that we Jews are a distinct nationality of which every Jew, whatever his country, his station, or shade of belief, is necessarily a member. That's Louis D. Brandeis, Justice of the United States Supreme Court. This article is designed to put the reader in possession of information regarding the Jew's own thought of himself as regards race, religion, and citizenship. In the last article, we saw the thought which Jewish representatives wished to plant in Gentile minds concerning this matter. The Senate committee which was to be convinced was made up of Gentiles. The witnesses who were to do the convincing were Jews. Senator Guggenheim said, "There is no such thing as a Jewish race because it is the Jewish religion." Simon Wolf said, "The point we make is this, that Hebrew or Jewish is simply a religion." Julian W. Max said, "Of what possible value is it to anybody to classify them as Jews simply because they adhere to the Jewish religion?"
Okay, all those three men were quoted at greater length in the previous chapter, giving their arguments for it being a religion. Yeah.
The object of this testimony was to have the Jews classified under various national names, such as Polish, English, German, Russian, or whatever it might be. Now, when the inquirer turns to the authoritative Jewish spokesmen who speak not to Gentiles, but to Jews about this matter, he finds an entirely different kind of testimony. Some of this testimony will now be presented. The reader will bear in mind that, as the series is not written for entertainment, but for instruction in the facts of a very vital question, the present article will be of value only to those who desire to know for themselves what are the basic elements of the matter. It should also be observed during the reading of the following testimony that sometimes the term race is used, sometimes the term nation. In every case, it is recognized that the Jew is a member of a separate people, quite aside from the consideration of his religion.
Yeah, would you say that when we use the term race for Jews, either they do or we do, we're speaking more in the terms of a nation than we are of an actual one of the races of mankind?
Well, see, this term race
is... Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, obviously, they're not one of the five major races of mankind.
Right.
But there are other racial designations. If you read somebody like Carlton S. Kuhn or John Baker, you find in Baker you get distinctions like Ethiopid and Oriental, which is Semitic really for him. And with Carlton S. Kuhn and some others, you get the Mediterranean, Nordic, and even finer distinctions than that. Germany supposedly has four races.
Yeah, well, see, that's getting down into the finer distinctions.
Yeah, that's really getting down into the detail. And according to National Socialist doctrine, which accepted that there were four racial types that could be called German, the Jews had two racial types, which were the Arminid type and the Orientalid type. In other words, Semitic and quasi-Armenian.
Those Armenian. Are the two racial types. Yeah, well, what about the Khazarian? What about that area? They don't, the National Socialists never got into that? Are they part of the Armenian or what? Because that's...
I'm not sure how that fits in. Those are the two two prevalent types, the Armenid and the Semitic or Orientalid. Two prevalent types. But Jews are mixed with every other race, as far as I know, except possibly Australoid. Wherever they live, they're somewhat mixed with the local population, if they've been there very long. You have Negro Jews in Africa, for example.
Well, are they real Jews? They just become Jews?
They are.
Well, they're from the original stock of those who are Jewish. Being what a Jew is very controversial.
This tribe in Rhodesia, what used to be Rhodesia, called the Lemba, has been given a genetic test, and they found that 10% of these people had the Cohen gene, which is supposed to be about 10% in any authentic Jewish population.
Huh. Very so interesting.
They're a race in the sense that they are a descent group.
Well, and they're a race in the sense that they see themselves as separate from every other people and race and
nation. Yeah, well, we get
nation.
Into that. Let's see. First, let us consider the testimony which forbids us to consider the term Jew as merely the name of a member of a religious body only. Louis D. Brandeis, Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States and world leader of the Zionist movement, says, "Councils of rabbis and others have undertaken at times to prescribe by definition that only those shall be deemed Jews who professedly adhere to Orthodox or Reformed faith. But in the connection in which we are considering the term, it is not in the power of any single body of Jews, or indeed of all Jews collectively, to establish the effective definition. The meaning of the word Jewish in the term Jewish problem must be accepted as coextensive with the disabilities which it is our problem to remove. Those disabilities extend substantially to all of Jewish blood. The disabilities do not end with a renunciation of faith, however sincere. Despite the meditations of pundits or the decrees of councils, our own instincts and acts, and those of others, have defined for us the term Jew." And that's attributed to something called Zionism and the American Jews, but I found that's actually from a speech called The Jewish Problem, How to Solve It, that Brandeis gave on the 25th of April, 1915.
Could it have been in both places? Or maybe it was quoted in that article?
I tried to find
something.
The title it's given here and couldn't find it.
Okay.
The Reverend Mr. Morris Joseph.
Was that by any chance the title of his speech?
The title was The Jewish Problem, How to Solve It.
Oh, you said that. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, that's according to Brandeis University.
Okay.
The Reverend Mr. Morris Joseph, West London Synagogue of British Jews.
Israel is assuredly a great nation. The very word Israel proves it. No mere sect or religious community could appropriately bear such a name. Israel is recognized as a nation by those who see it. No one can possibly mistake it for a mere sect. To deny Jewish nationality, you must deny the existence of the Jew.
And that's something called Israel a Nation by Mr. Morris Joseph.
That's pretty clear.
Arthur D. Lewis, West London Zionist Association. When some Jews say they consider the Jews a religious sect like the Roman Catholics or Protestants,
They are usually not correctly analyzing and describing their own feelings and attitude. If a Jew is baptized, or what is not necessarily the same thing, sincerely converted to Christianity, few people think of him as no longer a Jew. His blood, temperament, and spiritual peculiarities are unaltered.
I wonder if this would apply to Brother Nathaniel. I know there's so many fans of Brother Nathaniel. And you know, I'm open-minded about him, sort of. But still, he is a Jew. And even though he is sincerely converted to Christianity, probably sincerely, he still has this temperament and spiritual peculiarities. According to Arthur Lewis.
You don't have to look at him very carefully to tell that he's one. I mean...
Yeah, that's right. He certainly looks it.
It just radiates Jewishness, despite the fact that he's criticizing Jews the whole time. Bertram B. Benas, barrister at law. The Jewish entity is essentially the entity of a people. Israelites, Jews, Hebrews, all the terms used to denote the Jewish people bear a specifically historical meaning, and none of these terms has been convincingly superseded by one of purely sectarian nature. The external world has never completely subscribed to the view that the Jewish people constitute merely an ecclesiastical denomination. That's from Zionism, the national Jewish movement, it says. Mm-hmm. Leon Simon, a brilliant and impressive Jewish scholar and writer, makes an important study of the question of religion and nationality in his volume, Studies in Jewish Nationalism. He makes out a case for the proposition that the religion of the Jews is nationalism, and that nationalism is an integral part of their religion. It is often said, indeed, that Judaism has no dogmas. That statement is not true as it stands. He then states some of the dogmas and continues. And the Messianic Age means for the Jew not merely the establishment of peace on earth and goodwill to men, but the universal recognition of the Jew and his God. It is another assertion of the eternity of the nation. Dogmas such as these are not simply the articles of faith of a church to which anybody may gain admittance by accepting them. They are the beliefs of a nation about its own past and future. Page 14. Continuing. For Judaism has no message of salvation for the individual soul as Christianity has. All its ideas are bound up with the existence of the Jewish nation.
Now that's a great statement.
Yeah.
I thought, well, good. I'm glad to hear him saying that. Yeah. Judaism, according to this Jew, has no message of salvation for the individual soul. This is somebody that they think is an impressive and brilliant Jewish scholar and writer, this Leon Simon.
He's saying that the Judaism is radically different from Christianity.
Yeah, and it's all about the Jewish nation. And I had this little thing up at the beginning, which I passed by, but I think Jewishness is based on their idea of a common history, which is pretty much what he's saying there. I may be inspired by that. But including their religious history, it includes their religious history, but their whole history, it's all about the Jewish people. And they're as a chosen people and destined for great things, you know, and great world domination, or they would put it rulership in a good way, you know, they're going to be the light of the world or something. But, you know, this is just, it's nothing.
God will bless those who bless the Jews.
Yes, but it's nothing individual, and yet they're promoting individualism in our nations all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But they, even though they might seem they're very individualistic because they're so libertine, you know, and they don't have morals and so on, but it's just something I think should be studied a little more. This idea of that their difference, like you say, so totally different from Christianity.
Yeah. The idea that Jews are a religious sect precisely parallel to Catholics and Protestants is nonsense. Page 34. Gretz, the great historian of the Jews, whose monumental work is one of the standard authorities, says that the history of the Jews, even since they lost the Jewish state, still possesses a national solid national character. It is by no means merely a creed or a church history. Our history is far from being a mere chronicle of literary events or church history. Moses Hess, one of the historic figures through whom the whole Jewish program has flowed down from its ancient sources to its modern agents, wrote a book entitled Rome and Jerusalem, in which he stated the whole matter with clearness and force. You can find that on archive.org, by the way. At least the German edition.
Jewish religion,
he says, is above all Jewish patriotism.
Ha! There you go.
Page 61. Were the Jews only followers of a certain religious denomination like the others, then it were really inconceivable that Europe, and especially Germany, where the Jews have participated in every cultural activity, should spare the followers of the Israelitish confession neither pains nor tears nor bitterness. The solution of the problem, however, consists in the fact that the Jews are something more than mere followers of a religion. Namely, they are a race brotherhood, a nation. That's on page 71.
Yeah, page 71. Well, when you know what he says, what is he saying there exactly? If they were a religious denomination, then Germany should spare the file. What's he saying there? It's written in a kind of an inverted way.
Well, he's saying that
Germany
is quoting somebody, but he's saying that the Europeans and especially Germans have been harsh toward the Jews.
Oh, and if they were only following religious denomination, they wouldn't be. But the fact that they know that they're more than that, that's why they are. And rightly so. This is what the Zionists were admitting, and that's why...
the thing is, the fact that Zionists are writing this makes it a little bit, just a little bit ambiguous as evidence, because they want that to be true because they have an agenda that involves that assumption, and some Jew that might want to play down the fact of Jewish nationality and Jewish race consciousness.
Right, right. You know. Well, some of them were doing that then, but was Moses Hess known to be a big Zionist?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, he was a big Zionist. All right.
Oh, yeah, that's what
And like Herzl, yeah, they point out, say, we Jews are different. You know, we should be separate. We don't really, we understand how you Europeans don't really want us in your nations. They were saying that then, and that's why the National Socialists and Adolf Hitler and all could say, well, we can work with these people and let's, move them to their own place. It makes every bit of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In reality, this is Moses Hestel, in reality, Judaism as a nationality has a natural basis which cannot be set aside by mere conversion to another faith, as is the case in other religions. A Jew belongs to his race and consequently also to Judaism, in spite of the fact that he or his ancestors have become apostates. Pages 97 through 98.
Did you read that paragraph above? You didn't. You missed the paragraph that starts Hess. Yeah, I interrupted
Hess, like other authoritative Jewish spokesmen, denies that forsaking the faith constitutes a Jew a non-Jew. Judaism has never excluded anyone. The apostates severed themselves from the bond of Jewry. And not even them has Judaism forsaken, added a learned rabbi, in whose presence I expressed the above-quoted opinion. I just got a little confused by the quotation marks there.
Well, they are confusing.
Got back to where I was. Okay. Every Jew is, whether he wishes it or not, solidly united with the entire nation.
There you go. Whether he wishes it or not, they say every Jew, you know, he doesn't have to want to or agree or whatever, but he is whether he likes it or not. Because that's, it's in their blood.
Yeah, being a Jew apparently is a little bit like being a member of a gang. You get punished if you deviate.
Yeah, or like being a member of a nation that, that's true, they do punish them. But being a member of a nation, you are that whether you like it or not, you know, whether you'd rather not be, but you are because it's in your blood.
Simply to indicate that we have not been quoting outworn opinions, but the actual beliefs of the most active and influential part of Jewry, we close this section of the testimony with excerpts from a work published in 1920 by the Zionist Organization of America from the pen of Jesse E. Samter. The name of their national religion, Judaism, is derived from their national designation. An unreligious Jew is still a Jew, and he can with difficulty escape his allegiance only by repudiating the name of Jew. From the Guide to Zionism, page 5. That was published in 1920. It will be seen that none of these writers, and their number might be multiplied among both ancients and moderns, can deny that the Jew is exclusively a member of a religion without at the same time asserting that he is, whether he will or not, the member of a nation. Some go so far as to insist that his allegiance is racial in addition to being national. The term race is used by important Jewish scholars without reserve, while some who hold the German-originated view that the Jews are an offshoot of the Semitic race and do not comprise that race are satisfied with the term nation. Biblically, in both the Old Testament and the New, the term nation or people is employed. But the consensus of Jewish opinion is this: the Jews are a separate people marked off from other races by very distinctive characteristics, both physical and spiritual, and they have both a national history and a national aspiration.
Are you waiting for me to comment here?
Well, they're saying that the Germans came up with the idea that the Jews are a Semitic nation. That's interesting.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Yeah, they are part of the Semitic family. They're not. They don't make up the whole Semitic family, so they're just a part of it. But they are still a distinctive people and nation, and they, though, are kind of confused between whether they want to, but that's what this is pointing out. Sometimes they want to be so important, you know, that they're a race, and other times they want to say that they're just, you know, a German or a Frenchman or a Russian or something.
Yeah. It will be noticed how the testimony on the point of race combines the thought of race and nationality, just as the previous section combined the thought of nationality with religion. Supreme Justice Brandeis, previously quoted, appears to give a racial basis to the fact of nationality. He says, It is no answer to this evidence of nationality to declare that the Jews are not an absolutely pure race. There has, of course, been some intermixture of foreign blood in the 3,000 years which constitute our historic period. But owing to persecution and prejudice, the intermarriages with non-Jews which have occurred have resulted merely in taking away many from the Jewish community. Intermarriage has brought few additions. Therefore, the percentage of foreign blood in the Jews of today is very low. Probably no important European race is as pure, but common race is only one of the elements which determines nationality.
Well, what do you think of that?
I think it's not really true that the percentage of foreign bloods in the Jews of today is very low. I think European Jews, I'm not sure what the percentage is of European genes that they carry. I think it might be something like 40%. It's substantial. Yeah, enough that when they go back to the Middle East, they stand out a little bit.
Well, this Justice Brandeis, I mean, here he was, a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court, and supposed to be such a great jurist and all that. But, you know, he was very loyal to his Jewishness. Yeah. And he made all these strong, he was one of the most strong speakers about how Jews are so different from everybody else. Now, you know, how do they think that Jews are so great that they can be so distinctive and at the same time fit in to other nations and should be ruling and being on their Supreme Courts and so on. It's just, you know, anybody, it's the problem is the failure of American people and white people to see through this and to just stop it and not allow it. That was the failure.
Well, you know, actually getting back to that question of racial admixture to Jews, it's more obvious if you go outside of Europe, that because you see Jews that look totally different from European Jews. I already mentioned, I think, the Lemba Jews in Africa, mm-hmm. they just look black to us. And there are Chinese Jews that just look Chinese to us. And Middle Eastern Jews look somewhat different from European Jews also.
So the Jews who went to China a long time ago and they've, you know, mixed in with enough Chinese that they look, but they're still, you still consider them real Jews and not just artifacts?
They're real Jews because they passed the genetic test. It's like 10% of their population has the Cohen gene, the Cohen Y chromosome. And my understanding is a lot of the Jews in China have converted to Christianity, actually.
I'd like to get my DNA done, find out what what it is. You know, I hope I wouldn't have any terrible surprises. But if it was easy enough to do, I would do it.
I think it costs, I don't know, it was $200 a few years ago. It's probably cheaper than that now.
Well, you have to contact some place.
You can get your dog's DNA done for $50, I think.
Why would you get your dog's DNA done?
Purebred, to make sure it's pedigreed and all that. Hmm. Arthur D. Lewis, a Jewish writer in his The Jews, a Nation, also bases nationality on the racial element. The Jews were originally a nation and have retained more than most nations one of the elements of nationality, namely the race element. This may be proved, of course, by the common sense test of their distinguishability. By the common sense test of their distinguishability. You can more easily see that a Jew is a Jew than that an Englishman is English.
Mm-hmm.
Moses Hess is also quite clear on this point. He writes of the impossibility of Jews denying their racial descent and says, Jewish noses cannot be reformed and the black wavy hair of the Jews will not turn through conversion into blonde. Nor can its curves be straightened out by constant combing. The Jewish race is one of the primary races of mankind that has retained its integrity in spite of the continual change of its climatic environment, and the Jewish type has conserved its purity through the centuries.
There it is. I just found my place again. Okay, now this fellow, I'm hearing myself coming back. To my voice coming back to me, adding. Not all Jews now have these noses, and they don't have black wavy hair or kinky hair. What is it with all these blue-eyed Jews, even blue eyes and blonde hair and everything? What is it?
Well, that's people? That admixture that Brandeis said was very rare.
Well, there you get, like, someone like... Oh, who's that terrible lawyer that everybody hates with the red hair? Yeah, Deutschwitz. He doesn't look Jewish at all, except for, I guess, some of his features. How do they get to that? They must have an awful lot of intermixture.
He's got what they call a Jufro.
Yeah, yeah. There are signs there, but still, he's got that reddish hair and blue eyes.
it's a reddish wool is what he's got.
Yeah, it's true.
That shows the Negro ethics.
What makes it look so weird? Yeah, it's weird. Well, we see that people in non-white countries where everybody has black hair and dark eyes. You see some blondes and green-eyed people and so on. Yeah, just artifacts. Okay.
Jesse E. Zamter in the Guide to Zionism, recounting the history of the work done for Zionism in the United States, says, "And this burden was nobly borne, due partly to the commanding leadership of such men as Justice Louis D. Brandeis, Judge Julian W. Mack, and Rabbi Stephen S. Wise, partly to the devoted and huge labors of the old-time faithful Zionists on the committee, such as Jacob de Haas, Louis Lipsky, and Henrietta Schold, and partly to the aroused race consciousness of the mass of American Jews."
Ugh.
Four times in the brief preface to the fifth edition of Coningsby, Disraeli uses the term race in referring to the Jews. And Disraeli was proud of being racially a Jew, though religiously he was a Christian. In the Jewish Encyclopedia, the Jewish race is spoken of. In the preface, which is signed by Dr. Cyrus Adler as chief editor, these words occur: "An even more delicate problem that presented itself at the very outset was the attitude to be observed by the encyclopedia in regard to those Jews who, while born within the Jewish community, have for one reason or another abandoned it. As the present work deals with the Jews as a race, it was found impossible to exclude those who were of that race, whatever their religious affiliations might have been." But we are not interested in ethnology. As we are not interested in ethnology, the inquiry need not be continued further along this line. The point toward which all this trends is that the Jew is conscious of himself as being more than the member of a religious body. That is, Jewry nowhere subscribes in the persons of its greatest teachers and its most authoritative representatives to the theory that a Jew is only a brother of the faith. Often he is not of the faith at all, but he is still a Jew. The fact is insisted upon here not to discredit him, but to expose the double minds of those political leaders who, instead of straightforwardly meeting the Jewish question, endeavor to turn all inquiry aside by an impressive confusion of the Gentile mind.
True.
It may be argued by the small body of so-called Reformed Jews that the authorities quoted here are mostly Zionists.
That's what you were saying.
Yes. The reply is this: there may be, and quite possibly are, two Jewish programs in the world, one which it is intended the Gentiles should see, and one which is exclusively for the Jews. In determining which is the real program, it is a safe course to adopt the one that is made to succeed. It is the program sponsored by the so-called Zionists which is succeeding. It was made to succeed through the Allied governments, through the Peace Conference, and now through the League of Nations. That, then, must be the true Jewish program, because it is hardly possible that the Gentile governments could have been led as they are being led were they not convinced that they are obeying the behests of the real princes of the Jews. It is all well enough to engage the plain Gentile people with one set of interesting things. The real thing is the one that has been put over. And that is the program whose sponsors also stand for the racial and national separateness of the Jews. Now, this thing about the Reform Jews. I remember a couple of years ago, Glenn Beck got into, he got a lot of adverse attention from the Anti-Defamation League and some other Jews, or I don't know, a lot of, there was like a full page article, full page advertisement in the New York Times, I think, or one of those newspapers, signed by a bunch of rabbis complaining about Glenn Beck, because Glenn Beck was basically calling Reform Jews subversives, while saying that the Zionist Jews were the good guys. You know, the Reform Jews would include people like doggone, who's that financial predator, the really rich one?
Oh gosh, there's so many of them. You talking about American or a European?
Yeah.
Schiff or?
It's like on the tip of my tongue. This really rich one that Glenn Beck attacks all the time, or he was attacking all the time.
Oh, Soros?
Yeah, George Soros.
Okay.
Yeah, George Soros, you know, he's actually done things that were, well, that bothered the really rabid Zionists.
Oh, yeah, he's not.
But it doesn't make George Soros a good guy.
No, it doesn't. No.
No, but that's the kind of dichotomy that some people like to make here by this focus on Zionism. Some people want to see
Zionists. Well, I don't like Reformed Jews so much because they're going to fit in, but they're still going to be Jews. And I don't want the Jews to fit in and be a part of white society.
Well, yeah, that's one of the complaints that the non-Zionist Jews have about Zionists. And actually, there are a lot of Jews that are kind of lukewarm about Zionism.
Yeah.
Their complaint is that it embarrasses them.
Yeah, and it makes them look bad because Jews are judged by these Zionists. But I wish, in a sense, I wish they were all really sincere Zionists.
Yeah.
And they'd go on their way and find their homeland. But the thing is, even if they all went to a homeland, they still are going to be participating in the world. And we're now on an international level, and you're never going to get away from that. I don't see how. So they're still going to be influencing everything that goes on in the world from where they are, and even if they're not in your country.
Anyway, you know, I wanted to make the point that these non-Zionist Jews are not good guys either.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying they're not. I don't like them.
The idea that the Jews comprise a nation is the most common idea of all among Jews. Not only a nation with a past, but a nation with a future. More than that, not only a nation, but a super nation. We can go still further on the authority of Jewish statements. We can say that the future form of the Jewish nation will be a kingdom.
And well, I think so, don't you? See, that's where I agree. And that's what is in the protocols, too, that, you know, yeah, they're going to set up a kingdom. So what do you think about the International Jew, though, saying that they think the future form that the Jews have in mind is a kingdom?
Well, I don't think that's correct.
Okay. What would you think that they want to do? You think they don't even want to have a Jewish nation? What do you think the Jews want to end up with?
Well, the Zionist Jews over there, they kind of have their little, I don't know, I guess it's like an oligarchy or something. It's kind of like a, you know, a town that's run by a gang or something, I think.
Well, okay, yeah, they have a kingdom.
They have this apparently small political elite where they rotate the same people in the prime minister's chair over and over.
In Israel, you mean?
Yeah. They seem to have a small elite that actually runs things.
But see, you can't answer. You don't have an alternative for what the Jewish nation would be, according to the Jews, from if it's not a kingdom.
They seem to have an oligarchy, right?
Okay, they would want to have a world oligarchy, kind of like they have now.
Okay, now you're asking a completely different question.
Well, but that is what, if it's an oligarchy, they have this. They have a world oligarchy now.
Okay, oligarchy is associated with rule through financial power and just rule through wealth.
Yeah.
It's more or less a synonym for plutocracy.
Right.
And yeah, that is what they like.
Yeah. And so you think that therefore they're satisfied and they have attained what they want. And they've got it now and it will pretty much stay in this form?
I'm probably never satisfied. No, because I mean, if you're talking about the United States, the way things are now is untenable. It's not going to last.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's go on because we still got questions.
And as to the present problems of the Jewish nation, there is plenty of Jewish testimony to the fact that the influence of American life is harmful to Jewish life. That is, they are in antagonism, like two opposite ideas. This point, however, must await development in the succeeding article. Israel Friedlander traces the racial and national exclusiveness of the Jews from the earliest times, giving as illustrations two biblical incidents. The Samaritans, who were half Jews by race and who were eager to become full Jews by religion, and the repulsed by the Jews, who were eager to safeguard the racial integrity of the Jews. Also, the demand for genealogical records and for the dissolution of mixed marriages, as recorded in the book of Ezra. Dr. Friedlander says that in post-biblical times, this racial exclusiveness of the Jews became even more accentuated. Entry into Judaism never was, as in other religious communities, purely a question of faith. Proselytes were seldom solicited, and even when ultimately admitted into the Jewish fold, they were so on the express condition that they surrender their racial individuality. For the purpose of the present inquiry, says Dr. Friedlander, it is enough for us to know that the Jews have always felt themselves as a separate race, sharply marked off from the rest of mankind. Anyone who denies the racial conception of Judaism on the part of the Jews in the past is either ignorant of the facts of Jewish history or intentionally misrepresents them.
He's pretty hardcore. Now, this I looked him up. I just want to say real quick that he was a rabbi. He died in 1920. So he was a rabbi, educator, translator, and biblical scholar, and created with Rabbi Mordecai Kaplan the Young Israel Movement of Modern Orthodox Judaism. He was born in Poland, and then he ended up being able to go to... he attended Berlin University and he received his PhD from the University of Strasbourg in 1901. You see how nice Europeans were to these Jews? As I was saying to you, they always seemed, so many of them seemed to, you know, get to such high station in life. But these are just the ones that we know about. Okay.
Yeah. Elkin N. Adler says, no serious politician today doubts that our people have a political future. This future of political definiteness and power was in the mind of Moses Hess when he wrote in 1862, mark the date, in the preface of his Rome and Jerusalem, these words, no nation can be indifferent to the fact that in the coming European struggle for liberty, it may have another people as its friend or foe.
Okay, this Elkin Adler was a solicitor at law in London.
Okay.
And then you're talking about Hess. They're on to Hess now, though.
Yeah. Hess had just been complaining of the inequalities visited upon the Jews. He was saying that what the individual Jew could not get because he was a Jew, the Jewish nation would be able to get because it would be a nation.
Now, that's a good one.
Evidently, he expected that nationhood might arrive before the coming European struggle, and he was warning the Gentile nations to be careful, because in that coming struggle there might be another nation in the list, namely the Jewish nation, which could be either friend or foe to any nation it chose.
See, now, here's, hearing this, what this guy is saying, is that by, you know, that individual Jews would never be able to make it where they want to get to. But if they come together and they fight for Jews, just like they've done in the United States, you know, we ended up with all these, you know, we've got more Jews in Harvard than any other group and so on, you know, way beyond what they should get because as a nation, they insisted on all these rights. And I don't know if I'm saying this right, but anyway, you know, that's another way where they really are not, they're not for individual liberty or individualism, not for themselves anyway. For others, not for themselves.
Well, I'm going to say that I think whoever wrote this article has taken something a little bit out of context and distorted its meaning a bit. He's quoted the words coming European struggle and left off that it's the coming European struggle for liberty. Those are the words that Hess used. I don't think he was talking about the First World War, which is I think what he's implying, because he wants to connect it to the peace conference where the Zionists got a lot of things that they wanted. I think he's talking about socialist revolution, that kind of thing.
Okay.
All right. We don't want to misrepresent anything here. Dr. J. Abelson of Portsea College, in discussing the status of small nations as a result of the Great War, says, the Jew is one of these smaller nations, and claims for the Jew what is claimed for the Pole, the Romanian, and the Serbian, and on the same ground, that of nationality. Just as Brandeis voices the same thought, he says, while every other people is striving for development by asserting its nationality, and a great war is making clear the value of small nations, let us make clear to the world that we too are a nationality clamoring for equal rights. Mm-hmm. Again, says Justice Brandeis, let us all recognize that we Jews are a distinct nationality of which every Jew, whatever his country, his station, or shade of belief, is necessarily a member. And he concludes his article, from which these quotations are made, with these words, organize, 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 until every Jew must stand up and be counted. Counted with us or counted, or prove himself, wittingly or unwittingly, of the few who are against his own people.
Hmm.
You're with us or you're against us, as George W. Bush said. Mm-hmm. Again, it's like being a member of a gang.
Well, I agree with that. See, what I'm getting from this is that that the Jews are do what's best for the Jews, and this is how you do it, and that we will never accomplish what's best for white people if we continue to think in terms of this individuality and so on.
That's
and
right.
when it comes to setting the story straight or whatever, I don't care if we like if in the International Jew if they take things from here and there and try to fit it together to a certain a point that they're trying to make, because, you know, I think we need to do that. You know, if we need to stretch the truth a little bit or move things around a little bit here or there, look what our enemies do. They do that all over the place. So I don't see anything wrong with us doing it if it makes us able to act more cohesively and more strongly, if it's not that you don't get carried away with it.
Yeah, life is really about conflict among groups. It's not about conflict among individuals.
Yeah, we should see ourselves as a group, and there's too many that are in the white race that just really resist that and don't want to see themselves as part of any group. I was listening to some today on a radio program. Made me pretty sick.
You have to make them more aware of the other groups that are predatory toward us. That way they circle the wagons. Now, this next paragraph here talks about Sir Samuel Montagu, and I think that's a mistake. There was a Jewish banker who died very early in the 20th century named Samuel Montagu. But he was not the governor of Palestine under the British Mandate.
But there was a Samuel Montagu who was.
There?
I think so. I was reading that. It seems like, unless I'm confused, it seems like I was reading that not long ago. Maybe I looked it up. I don't know. Well, let's just go ahead and read it, even though you're saying.
What I found was that the first High Commissioner of Palestine was Herbert Samuel.
Well, but you know, we don't have much time left, and I don't want to.
There was an Edwin Samuel Montague that was the cousin of Herbert Samuel. I think this is a mistake. Anyway, this is what it says. Sir Samuel Montague, the British Jew who has been appointed governor of Palestine under the British mandate, habitually speaks of the Jewish kingdom, usually employing the expression, the restoration of the Jewish kingdom. It may be of significance that the native population already refer to Sir Samuel as the King of the Jews. Ahad Ha'am, who must be regarded as the one who has most conclusively stated the Jewish idea as it has always existed, and whose influence is not as obscure as his lack of fame among the Gentiles might indicate, is strong for the separate identity of the Jews as a supernation. Leon Simon succinctly states the great teacher's views when he says, while Hebraic thought is familiar with the conception of a superman, distinguished, of course, from Nietzsche's conception by having a very different standard of excellence, yet its most familiar and characteristic application of that conception is not to the individual, but to the nation, to Israel, as the supernation or chosen people. In fact, the Jewish nation is presupposed in all characteristically Jewish thinking, just as it is presupposed in the thinking of the prophets.
Okay, you know, we've only got a couple minutes, and I think maybe we should summarize. You know, see, this is why we need, I wish we could just go as long as we needed to. This hour is not enough anymore. It's just not enough. We've got a bunch of paragraphs here. Maybe we'll have to finish them. I don't want to skip them. Maybe we'll just finish them next week. So go ahead where you were and just as far as we can get to. And
all right.
The prophets.
In those countries, says Moses Hess, which form a dividing line between the Occident and the Orient, namely Russia, Poland, Prussia, and Austria, there live millions of our brethren who earnestly believe in the restoration of the Jewish kingdom and pray for it fervently in their daily services. This article, therefore, at the risk of appearing tedious, has sought to summon from many sides and from many periods the testimony which should be taken whenever the subject of Jewish nationalism comes under discussion. Regardless of what may be said to the Gentile authorities for the purpose of hindering or modifying their action, there can be no question as to what the Jew thinks of himself. He thinks of himself as belonging to a people, united to that people by ties of blood which no amount of creedal change can weaken, heir of that people's past, agent of that people's political future. He belongs to a race. He belongs to a nation. He seeks a kingdom to come on this earth, a kingdom which shall be over all kingdoms, with Jerusalem, the ruling city of the world. That desire of the Jewish nation may be fulfilled. It is the contention of these articles that it will not come by way of the program of the protocols, nor by any of the other devious ways through which powerful Jews have chosen to work.
Well, I found that really interesting, and we're really going to have to quit here and let people wait till next week to finish this, because they're saying that it will not come by way of the program of the protocols.
Yeah, well, the rest of it is devoted, I believe, to lamenting the fact that the Jews don't live up to the ideal about Jews that some people cherish.
Okay, well, maybe we'll just summarize it next week. But ladies and gentlemen, come back next week for the next chapter.
Rage, rage, I'm breaking up drinks all night long.
Thanks for listening. The International Jew Study Hour will return next week, exclusively on the White Network.